You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication.
Hey,
here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started.
Well, people usually skip ahead to see if it's me or Ed to figure out if they want to listen or not. So I just wanted you guys to know I'm here. Listen on. Continue, Daniel.
As well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Todd Adkins.
What?
Hello. All right. Well, today we have a great question about the advantages and disadvantages to planting in an old church. So we'll play the question in just a little bit, but just really quickly, if you haven't yet subscribed or rated us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, it'll take less than a minute. Yeah, less than a minute. You could actually do it while listening to the episode. But if you could do that for us, that would be great. It does help a ton in getting the word out, in making us better. We actually read I actually read every single one of them.
That's brutal.
Todd, I mean, you can't
I periodically read every one of them, but I don't like have it on my feed where it's coming in every time I get a review. Do you, Daniel?
No, but I do check. I do check. So
check
be sure to do that. Let's listen into the question.
Hi there. My name is Joe Deckard, and I am a church planner in Central Indiana. And I was gifted a building by my denomination. And I'm curious about if we could discuss some of the pitfalls of planting a church in a building that was once a church, maybe along the lines of should that space be more of a public space, as I've heard you guys state statistics say that if you plant in a public space, you have more of a chance of being self-sustaining. So that is my question. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of planting in an old church? Thank you.
Okay, so there's a couple things going on here, in my opinion. First of all, have you ever heard the saying, Daniel, never look a gift horse in the mouth? Have you ever heard that?
No.
Well,
I don't know any horse references other than Old MacDonald had a farm.
Okay, so the saying, never look a gift horse in the mouth.
It means like G-I-F-T?
Yeah, gift. If someone is giving you a horse, you're not supposed to look at its mouth. Because it's a gift, that would be offensive. You can tell a ton about the health of a horse by its mouth.
Okay.
And I would say, in this instance, always look a gift horse in the mouth. Someone is gifting you an older facility, and having been given older facilities before, or using older facilities before, or people wanting to give us older facilities before, you definitely need to check in on all of that. And by that, I mean, you want to look at that thing from top to bottom, make sure that you're checking for leans, make sure you're checking for all kinds of different things. So by that, I mean, you're looking at the HVAC, you're looking at the roof, you're looking at zoning, you're looking at everything, especially if that was a church and then it was something else and now it's going to be a church again. You may have some zoning issues, because as soon as it wasn't a church, now that you're making it a church again, there could be issues there. So that, I immediately put my executive pastor hat on there for a moment.
I thought you were going to say you put your Kentucky hat on.
No, I but did I that like with that. The gift horse analogy.
Yeah, I like that.
But it's really important, even if it's your denomination, unless you're, and if they're, really wanting you to do this, then I would leverage that and say, hey, guys, let's do an assessment. Oh, we need a new roof. Can you guys put a new roof on it before I launch a thing?
That's good. Part of it is whether you're planting a church or a campus, It's doing that cost benefit analysis and right, looking at how much you have to fundraise and be supported before you can launch out and get going, and what that looks like to be self-sustaining. So you could very much, you know, launch a church or a campus with $200,000. And then now you have a gifted building and you're like, whoa, now I don't, you know, I don't need to pay rent anymore. This is going to be awesome. But with all the repairs and everything, you may, it may cost you $300,000 or $400,000 to launch.
Good gracious.
Instead of $200,000.
Because of zoning requirements, all that stuff.
Now, I've seen churches who have actually had gifted buildings, or they had a building and they actually decided to go rent.
Right.
Like they rented out the building that they owned to another church, and then they went to a school or a theater because of the feel and the look of the building and the look of the service.
Now, I would say different generations respond differently to different venues. So one of the interesting things is if in a place like Central Indiana, and I don't know how big the town is. So one of the things is if it's a decent sized town, then, and it's at the city central, man, you've got an opportunity to make rent on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I would say look at that as a shared workspace.
Yeah, if you're like downtown.
Fire up some Wi-Fi and let people crash there.
Yeah, like if you're in Indianapolis.
Totally.
Right? So, I mean, that's another thing about this question. If you've been gifted a building in a city center, right? Let's say you've been gifted a building in Sydney, or gifted a building like downtown Sydney, or gifted a building downtown New York, downtown Indianapolis, downtown Nashville. I mean, that is a very different, and let's say it does require a lot of work, that is a very different proposition when you're wanting to plant in a city center versus when you're planting more in a suburban or a rural area.
Where I was going with that too, though, is people, if it's a cool old building, like it's got some, you know,
exposed brick wall,
patina, then, and you know, big stained glass and stuff, it's kind of cool. I mean, there's, you know, almost a vintage retro whatever vibe you would say, that's cool about it. And is people expect, you know, people sometimes expect a church to look like that, and are almost a double take when churches don't look like that. So you could go both ways on it. The other thing is, you know, for me personally, from a straight worship perspective, you know, I can get into worship anywhere, but for whatever reason, some of those old, old buildings with vaulted ceilings and lots of stained glass, it's just different, man.
Yeah, it is.
The environment is to inspire awe and glory and all the stuff you should be doing when you worship.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about vision, strategy, values, on the podcast. And I mean, I've several audits and no silver bullets where I actually ask you to, thank you, Todd. I was expecting that. where I actually ask you, when you go in and you're auditing a space and you're auditing your values, it's not just about what you see, but it's also what you smell, right? In other words,
yes,
when you go into that older building, what you need to understand is that built environment, that built space is going to inform the values of your church as much as the ones that you have on the wall. Because when someone comes in, they're not immediately before coming in being told, hey, these are the values of the church, this is what they value, believe, and all this stuff. They're going to just observe,
yep, see, what they see,
smell, and that is going to be what they consider your values. So I know if you're very utilitarian, you're like, oh, great, I don't need to pay rent. And maybe the building's in great condition and you don't need to upgrade the HVAC. And you don't need to, maybe you just need a fresh coat of paint everywhere. That is awesome, but you need to understand that it is going to speak into your values.
Going back to the, I think part of the question, should I use it as a public space? I mean, you know, I mentioned using it as a shared workspace. So there's companies like WeWork and that are just big clearinghouses for locations. Now they have a set guidelines for, hey, if you're going to be part of us, then you know, you have to do these things, which is cool. It's understandable. But there's also things that you don't have. I mean, it doesn't have to be shared workspace. It could just be opening up the community to different clubs, organizations, or whatever. At that point, you have to decide whether it's going to be completely open or you're going to fence it
That's good. So, why don't you tease that out a little bit?
So, what do you mean by that? Opening it up to anybody means it doesn't matter, you know, creed or what the subject matter is, you're going to let people in. So, you know, we would host Alcoholics Anonymous. There were other organizations that may have wanted to host at our place that we were like, no. Or there may have been even other churches that wanted to host at our place. And depending on who they were, we would sometimes say no. That's up to you. I think if you have if you fence it, you just have to have clear guidelines and decisions on, you know, what you're open to. I mean, most things that were agnostic, we didn't care about. We only cared if you had, if there was only a theological issue or something that was just brutally directly against what we believed. If it was like, you know, the Rotary Club or another 4-H or something like that, we'd be happy to. We'd be happy to host because you're getting people in your building and they become familiar with it and it makes it that much easier to come in.
For sure. So part of that is auditing the space that you have. So for example, the one of the campuses of our church, we actually bought an old warehouse and we built out probably a third of the space, walled it out. And what we've actually done, what our campus pastor and our elders have actually done is part of the warehouse, we've rented out to a gymnastics, like a company, right? Or I don't know if you call them companies.
Are you a Tumblr?
No, I'm not. but so part of it is gymnastics. So they've rented out space. And then they've also actually rented out office space on another side of the building because it was like some sort of steel or I don't even know what kind of manufacturing. It was some sort of manufacturing big space. So there's actually offices that you know, the foreman and other people would work out of that would kind of overlook the space. So they actually rented out all that office space to nonprofits in our community and in our organization.
Very cool. Well, I think at the end of the day, if you're opening up the public space, you just definitely want to have a strategy so you have it clearly set who you are going to allow in and who you're not. And then on top of that, I would just be prepared to think about there's also ways you can make money if you wanted to. Like, I'm on a school board and we rent our school to multiple organizations. Everything from it's used for a karate school.
Yeah.
And they just bring in their mats.
Yeah, there you go.
To a couple other things, and it brings in extra money for us as a school. And again, it exposes people to the school so that if their kids want to attend there, it's a win-win.
Huge. Well, thanks again for listening in. If you haven't yet subscribed, be sure to do so, and we will catch you next time.